Good afternoon. At the same time of year, over 3,000 years ago, Israel had passed through the sea and was well into the beginning of its 40-year trek in the wilderness. After escaping Pharaoh, they had been elated, but this faded quickly in the face of a new reality. They were discovering to their chagrin that this new freedom had a price, and it wasn't what they had expected. For a little perspective into their plight, we need to take a look at a few things. First off, the reality of slavery that they had known during their time in Egypt. In our modern world, the concept of slavery is viewed through several filters. Of course, we see it through Hollywood movies, but the other images, the more serious images, usually surround the slavery of Africans in North America during the 18th and 19th centuries, and the worst images of all, the Nazi slave labor camps of World War II, or for that matter, the brutal gulags of Russia, which were really death camps. These are the most brutal forms of what is called slavery. In our modern world, that's what we are used to thinking of. However, even the movie The Ten Commandments partly showed what both the Bible and history confirm is a more realistic picture of what common slavery was in that age and world. Recall that until the last few hundred years, this world has operated largely on slavery. It was institutionalized in the ancient world. It was simply part of life. Nowhere in all the annals of Egypt, Greece, and Rome, all the writings that have survived, is there a single condemnation or criticism of slavery. It was as essential to the operation of that world as electricity is today and taken for granted. What's more, except for war captives and criminals, most slavery in the ancient world, and I'm not trying to be facetious, had a far greater similarity to what we call employment today. There's just no closer parallel, at least in our Western world. In fact, in the more prosperous circles of society, it wasn't uncommon for slaves to own slaves. Many could rise to high office and even buy their freedom. And in the Roman Empire, this practice was encouraged. Opportunities were provided to rise out of slavery and become full citizens. We easily remember the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis. By the hand of Pharaoh, he became a form of deputy Pharaoh in his own right. And even though we know it was by the hand of God that it happened, it was within the structure of those ancient societies that such doors could open. In contrast, try to picture a slave in the American South at the time of the Civil War being appointed Vice President of the United States. Our society, how our people viewed slavery, would have made that impossible. That said, look back again at Israel in Egypt, and even the Bible confirms the basic nature of common slavery in the ancient world. The accounts make it clear that while they were captives in the land and they needed the hand of God to free them from that captivity, because it wouldn't have come any other way, still, they had relatively normal lives. They had homes, they had family groups, communities, good food, clothing, an arrangement not too dissimilar from what we experience. And when you consider that many modern workers, I could include probably too many of us, even in this country, live paycheck to paycheck, and while we may have the legal right to walk out on a job at any time, the necessities of life tend to trap people. Money's necessary to support home and family, and so most people can't afford to just walk out on a whim and take their chances. The resentment and the desperation that this can build in a human heart is not very different from what the Israelites were experiencing in Egypt. On the other hand, their lives were settled enough in that time and in that place that when God sent Moses to intervene on their behalf, they weren't that appreciative. No sooner had Moses approached Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had doubled the Israelites' burden, the Israelites instantly took on an attitude that basically said, don't rock the boat. Don't do us any favors. Rather than saying even more, yes, please get us out of this land, they basically turned around and said, leave us alone. Of course, Moses didn't do that. He kept that work going as God intended him to, and he eventually got them thrown out of the land. By the time the Passover had come and the firstborn had died, Pharaoh threw Israel out of the land. They couldn't have stayed if they'd wanted to. But initially, like being freed from a horrible job situation, there was elation, free at last. And they could take the wealth of Egypt with them. And they were headed for a land flowing in milk and honey. Like someone who just won the lottery, they were on Easy Street. And just as quickly, their selfish dreams faded away in the face of reality. First, they're almost killed by Pharaoh at the sea. Then they find themselves in a wilderness and eventually up against armies that they couldn't comprehend. What's more, their homes were gone. Their usual routine was gone. Their security was gone. The good food and bedding was gone. Now it was just dust, tents, and the wilderness. And to add insult to injury, while this mysterious pillar of cloud and fire led them, and according to Moses, this was the presence of God leading them forward, this cloud wouldn't even let them settle down, because every time it moved, they had to pick up, pack up, and move again. So viewed humanly, is it any wonder they wanted to go back to Egypt? Conveniently, all the hardship of slavery was forgotten. Being prisoners in that land was forgotten. All they could remember were the comforts, proverbial comfort zone. And that reaction is very human. In the 1980s, when the Soviet Union was beginning to crack, they began letting more of their people emigrate. And many of those immigrants came to the United States. And in short order, many of those immigrants turned around and went home to Mother Russia. Why? Simple. They couldn't handle freedom. They had come out of a system that did so much for them and regulated their lives so completely, they couldn't adjust to freedom of choice and the responsibilities that come with it. So they fulfilled the same horrible cliche that the Israelites did coming out of Egypt and wanting to return. Better the chains I know than the freedom I don't know. A few weeks ago, Cheryl Carlson, I was just going to let it hang there and see what happened. Cheryl sang special music here, and while I don't know the name of the song, it essentially said, Lord, you took me out of Egypt, now take Egypt out of me. Excellent words, and easier said than done. In the book of Hebrews, it says of that generation of Israel, they couldn't enter the promised land because of unbelief. The original language actually means obstinate disbelief, an attitude that cannot be persuaded. Ever encountered anyone like that? I've been a steward for the union in the place where I work for too many years now. And just to expose some of my own naive thinking, I'm always amazed at the number of people I encounter when there are critical situations there. People who just don't want to get along. They don't want to accept any help that's offered to them. No matter what you do for their benefit, no matter what you say, they staunchly refuse to believe you, and by their own fears or weaknesses, they turn against you. Because in their own minds, you can't be trusted. When that happens, the game is over. And there was an aspect of that in Israel, for Israel in Egypt. And it shouldn't be surprising given their backgrounds. For 400 years, they had been in Egypt. And while not allowed into the mainstream of Egyptian society, And while their elders evidently gave them a modicum of knowledge of the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, nevertheless, they had imbibed of Egyptian culture for too long. Their thinking, their desires, their impulses all reflected the society that had surrounded them and sustained them for generations. So when trapped in the wilderness, waiting for Moses on the mountain, it was absolutely natural for them to turn around, to turn back to the religions of Egypt, to make the golden calf, to go back to what was comfortable. It had been easier in Egypt to bow to its customs, to accept its standards, to go along, than it was to turn to the God of their fathers, to turn aside from the world that had produced them, to reject everything they had been, and to follow the truth no matter what the price. And by now, maybe you know where I'm going. That generation of Israel could not be allowed to enter the promised land, because if they had been given that land with the attitudes they carried, the new land would have been quickly polluted with the customs of the old land. God had to prove them in the wilderness, and that was actually a purging. Like Israel, who was led by God in that wilderness, those of us who are the called of God, those of us who have answered that call, who have desired to turn our lives over to the Father through Jesus Christ, we too are being led by God in the wilderness of this world and its societies. The presence of the one who became Jesus led Israel in the pillar of cloud and fire. And while we don't have the benefit of that very obvious presence, his goals are the same, his faithfulness is the same, and his presence in our lives is every bit as real, more so when you consider the meaning of the next holy day, Pentecost, coming up in just a few weeks. His purpose is the same, to prove us, to test us, but all to build us up into his people. And in Philippians 1, verse 6 and elsewhere, he has declared that he will finish this work. He will bring us to the promised land, just as he did finally bring Israel to their promised land and establish them as a nation. He never failed in his promises, and he never will. But there are choices we have to make along the way, similar to the ones Israel had to make. Freedom, true freedom, demands a price. There's always a cost. And if we've been freed from Egypt, we can't keep dragging it along with us. At some point, we have to let it go and embrace the true freedom that God holds out to us. Only our fears or ignorance of God and his motives can hold us back. But the more we choose to look at that pillar of cloud and fire, the more we look to the presence of God in our lives, the more we choose to look away from what lies behind, the clearer the way will be and the greater the victory. Keep your eyes on that pillar and never give up. And he will see you to that promised land.